Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now, imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey everyone, welcome to the 415th episode of Just Shoot It, a podcast about filmmaking, screenwriting, and directing. This episode is brought to you by patron Ryan Valdez. Check out his work at ryanmv.com. I'm Warren Kaplan.
And I'm Matt Enloe. Today we've got Josh Forbes, the director of Destroy All Neighbors, out on Shudder and other places where you watch movies. Now we're here to talk to him about how he makes this crazy, weird, pretty zany horror comedy that he describes as pretty goopy, gory, filled with creature effects, funny. It's kind of a wild, crazy movie. We go in deep on how he made the movie, the process of getting it made, the long journey to even getting it into production, and his kind of overall philosophies on his career and also just making this film and how he balances his feature film career with his commercial and music video career as well.
Yeah. Basically the topic that we've been digging into on the podcast the last couple of months is like,
if you like this show,
yeah,
you probably like those topics.
Which is like, how does one do it for a long time and keep doing it? And his movie has like a cool cast. Jonah Ray, Kumail Nanjiani, Tom Lennon, John Daly, Alex Winter from Bill and Ted.
Pretty cool.
Yeah, real fun cast. And he's kind of like us. He's been in the comedy world for a long time. He's done a ton of music videos. He did like Carly Rae Jepsen video and Meghan Trainor and a bunch of other cool things. If you want to feel the lifestyle of a director, all the glory and the agony, this is an episode to listen to. And we are recording this on March 10th and the Oscars were just tonight. So we apologize for all the Oscar stuff we talk about, which is probably way outdated by the time this episode comes out.
And maybe gets cut. Who knows? Shout out to Noah Bayshore. before we hop into our conversation with Josh, though, Oren, I do want to razz you a little bit. So we were texting. You went to a party the other day.
Oh,
you
yes.
Ran into a listener.
Yeah, as I always do.
I feel like, yep. And you were like, oh, yeah, it's really hard out there for directors. In a way that I was like, yeah, man, that's what I've been saying for like 2 years. And I feel like something about the way that our text exchange, it was like, oh, Oren finally understands that it is super slow for people.
No, I mean, maybe that is kind of like how you interpreted our exchange. But I think you were asking about how various directors we know and other and don't know are doing. And I said, everyone is struggling.
That's right. That is what you said. Yeah. And I guess what I'm laughing about is that like somehow, Oren, I know you're always stressed and you always want to be working more than you are, but you've done very well these last few years.
Yeah, but
and it's always driven me a little crazy only because like I want you to do well. I'm very happy that you're doing well. But it makes it like you're a tiny bit, I don't want to say out of touch because that's not fair. That's an over exaggeration of what I'm getting at. But like everyone has their own subjective experience. And I feel like because of commercials and you doing well, it was hard for you to understand that it was literally you were the only person we know who was working.
Well, but that's not true. Like we know a lot of people that are working. Like to me, there's like the, if you think of biblical stories, there's like the 7 years of, you know, where they have, there's a lot of grain. What's it called? Mm-hmm. A plenty, 7 years mm-hmm. of plenty and 7 years of famine. Mm-hmm. Right. And in the Bible, it's like when there's plenty, you got to save. And when there's famine, you got to use your savings. But I think in Hollywood, there's always ebbs and flows. There's times when sure. everyone has a ton of work, when Netflix, you know, you call them up and they
throw out
a
movies
show.
Left and right. Yeah, sure.
There's COVID, when there's like a boom of home entertainment. And then there's strikes and there's other things that are stopping us from working as much. But to me, when everyone's working, of course, I want to be working. But when everyone's not working, I want to be in the half of people that are working. You know?
sure.
So, maybe right now it's not half, maybe it's 60% or 70% of people aren't working, but I still want to be in that 30%.
Sure. Yeah, of course. But I guess what I'm getting at is that, like,
it's fair to complain that you're in the 70%, not in the 30%, as opposed to saying, hey, well, I guess it's slow, so I shouldn't be bummed or like trying to find new angles to get work.
Sure. That's certainly true. And I hope you don't ever think that I would be in the latter, but I guess what I'm saying is, like, it's a fine line between like spinning out and manic depression of like, oh, what am I going to do? I have to feed my family, and acknowledging overall trends in the business. Right.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think if you see the trends and you can identify them and you can adapt to them, then you will hopefully like avoid, you know, like get sure. in, get in, surf the waves of work and success and demand, like being in demand. And so, yeah, we have plenty of friends, plenty of people that have been on this podcast that can work every day of their life if they want to, you know. And then we have also some commercial director friends and, you know, indie feature friends that are working pretty regularly this year and last year, and writer friends and all that stuff. So, you know, I get it. I'm not like, obviously there's trends and there's things, and sometimes it's nice to hear that you're not the only one struggling, you know? And so that's kind of, I think our conversation was a little bit like, yeah, everyone is like asking why I'm not getting more work. But also to me, like, the more interesting thing to ask is like, how can I get more work?
Sure. You know? Sure.
And regardless of what the trend is or how busy things are, if there's a strike or there isn't a strike and all that stuff. So anyhow, thank you for razzing me. I feel very lucky that I get to work, and then also unlucky when I don't get to work. Anyhow, on that note, you should check out our Patreon, patreon.com/justshootitpod. It's a place where you can throw us a buck or two and you can help us feel luckier. Help us realize that this is a show that people listen to and care about. And maybe some of this stuff, you know, you can commiserate with, or you can be inspired by, or you can find tips and tricks for things like, you know, Josh actually had a really good tidbit about how to stay in touch with actors that you work with once and you might want to work with again. So, yeah, check out our Patreon, patreon.com/justshootitpod. We'd be stoked to see even $1 a month from you. Very excited.
Also, another good reason to be on the Patreon is that you get to know about our live shows and get hip to that information a little bit early. If you're listening to this the day that it came out, you're only one day late to our last live show, which hopefully went great. I bet it did. We're recording it before we had it. So, but if you want to be in the know for the next one, go to patreon.com/justshootitpod and throw us a buck or two.
Yep. Okay. That's it. We've said the URL more times than allowed. On with the show.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Josh Forbes, welcome to the podcast. Hello.
Hi.
Hey guys. How's it going? You got a new movie out called Destroy All Neighbors.
Yeah. We just got really panned at the Oscars tonight, and I'm upset.
Yeah, but it's a bummer. It's a bummer. Yeah. But listen.
Is it not true that the holdovers kind of stole your script?
Well, I mean, I can't really talk about it, but yeah, let's put that in the yes pile.
Here's the thing. Raging Bull, Destroy All Neighbors. They're all going to go down to history as, just kidding.
Yeah.
Ignored.
As movies where one guy got fat. Yeah. And Jonah got skinny. Yeah. But yes, I did a movie called Destroy All Neighbors. You can watch it on Shudder right now, or you can even rent it on whatever, Vudu or, you know.
Sure. Yeah. Where you get movies. You could just watch it right away.
On the Internet Movie Database, it says it came out in 2024. So did it just come out?
Yeah, it did. It came out this year. Yeah. Cool. So it's actually eligible for the next year's Oscars, which, you know.
Which explains a lot. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, because Everything Everywhere came out early, you know, that year when it came out. So that's what we're hoping for.
Josh, tell us a little bit about Destroy All Neighbors. Just give us the pitch.
Okay.
Set the table for us.
So, yeah, Destroy All Neighbors is a horror comedy. A lot of gore and goop and, you know, I'm bad at pitching things. But, you know, it's kind of like Evil Dead meets Barton Fink meets, I don't know, Airheads or something like that. You know, as sure. Three movies you would definitely combine.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it stars Jonah Ray Rodriguez and Alex Winter and a whole bunch of other great people. And
I mean, I saw Kumail Nanjiani, isn't it?
Yeah.
Is Alex Winter, is he Bill or Ted?
He is Ted.
Not Keanu, obviously, Alex Winter's. But like for listeners at home, he's also a talented filmmaker in his own right.
Kind of
an icon.
Yeah. Speaking of like, you know, before we started recording, we were talking about like our collective commercial careers, and you know that's one of the things that like really got me excited about Alex like years ago was realizing that he was directing commercials in even music videos, and then now he's been like just killing it with documentaries and
guys, Alex just texted me and he said he played Bill actually.
Oh shit. Okay.
Yeah,
sorry. Oh wait, he was Bill, wasn't he? Did you actually text him?
No, I clicked on IMDb.
Right. Yeah. Cause he was Preston. Cause he would play Granny Preston as well. That's right. You know, it was a 50-50 shot. I just,
sure. Oh yeah. Yeah.
I mean like we could talk about him and the movie and stuff like that, but just in terms of like being a working director, you know, you always hear, you only kind of hear the stories of the top crust of people, and you know, and it's always a magical thing of just, you know, like Tarantino worked at a video store and now he's the god of Hollywood and that's just what happens, you know. But it was really interesting to sort of map Alex's career, because it's like, you know, he started out like as a director as well, like him and Tom Stern, and they had a show called Idiot Box on MTV. And like, you know, he didn't do what a lot of young actors do, which is kind of like fizzle out or, you know, just sort of like rest on your laurels. Like he continually reinvented himself and continued to be creative. And so he's just always a guy that I'm always like, oh, I just love that guy. Just I want to, you know, he's a hero of mine. And so when we got this movie up and going and we were able to like pitch it to him and he signed on and said yes, it was just amazing. Just the best.
Well, so that's kind of the root of what I'm curious about everything. And you're, you know, a music video director and a commercial director and kind of like cut from the same cloth as Oren and I. But I'm very, very curious about this film in particular.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting to hear that you brought on some talent after the movie was quote unquote up and running.
Mm-hmm.
Walk us through the process of getting it going. How long did it take? What was your runway like? Give us the origin story.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's probably took about 10 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, it started with my buddy Charlie and I. He had worked on a music video of mine. He does stop motion. And we were just, you know, we were just nerd out about movies. And we just kind of knew that we wanted to work together on something. I'm the kind of person who, like, if I drive by a place and it's like, oh, that's a donut shop. Is that a movie? Donuts? Or is that a, you know, I was commiserating with him about how at the time I was living in East Hollywood, Little Armenia. Mm-hmm. And we had just had our first kid and my neighbor would just bang on the wall. It was this like guy, he's like probably in his 30s or something like that, but he lived with his parents and he would just bang on the wall all the time and like yell through there, you know, like, I'm going to kill your kid or, you know, or like fucking bait, whatever. I don't know if you can swear on this, but it was just awful. Just like a terrible guy. And so
no swearing, but child murder is totally
fine. Sure. Yeah, that's fine. Okay. So I was telling Charlie about this and he's like, oh, well, you know, I have this guy who lives next to me. And he started telling me about it. He's like, yeah, he'll play like Sade at like 3 a.m. Mm-hmm. And like he'll play Smooth Operator like on a loop and like he wears a tank top and, you know, or wife beater or whatever. And like he always like, and he even filmed it, you know, the guy would show him his arm and be like, hey, Charlie, feel my muscles. Hey, you know, just crazy. And so like, and I was just telling him, I'm like, dude, like, I lay in bed and just think about murdering this guy. Like, that's all I do is I just obsess over it.
Your baby gets to sleep. Right.
Yeah. And then the murder the fantasy. But anyway, like, so I was like, oh, maybe this is a movie. And we started sort of toying with this idea of like, oh, what if, you know, you have this guy and he's making all this noise and like the protagonist is like starting to go crazy. And then he, you know, I'm like, oh, and then what if he kills him? And then it becomes kind of like the Telltale Heart, like, you know, cops are showing up and he's like, you know, whatever. Like it started like unfolding.
You start riffing. Yeah. Yeah.
We started riffing and, you know, we just got excited about it. And we just started brainstorming scenes and outlining and, I had heard like Darren Aronofsky did this for The Wrestler. He was involved in the writing, but he was like, okay, I get director credit and you know, the writer gets the writer credit. And we're going to like, we're both getting our hands in the soup or whatever. And it's going to get messy, but like, that's how we're going to delineate things. So it was sort of like that with Charlie where, you know, we would kind of break it down together and then he would go off and do a draft and then bring it back. And then I would, you know, break it apart and like, I like this, let's cut this or whatever.
Can I ask you as a man who has a child and I assume a spouse and obligations and also a directing career that you probably have to keep going in music videos and commercials and everything else you're doing. How many of these, like, can this be a movie? I'm going to write the feature script for it. Do you have like going at any one time? Like, do you have the donut shop movie?
We don't have the donut shop movie. But
or do you have to get super excited and you're kind of pitching it around and if people are reacting, then you're like, OK, I'm going to outline this. And then
I mean, right now, I'm thinking I have like 4 or 5 of those like kind of cooking and part of how
with different people.
Yeah. There's one guy, a friend of mine, James Rowland, who is this like amazing writer. And he created this show called Blood Drive that was on Sci-Fi, and I feel like nobody saw it, but it's awesome. He and I are like tinkering on a couple things.
I ask because, you know, I think as filmmakers, especially like as we have so many, like we're worried about making a living and we're worried about the rest of our lives. Some of us are just locked up in this, like, we don't want to commit to a project because we don't know, well, who's buying that and who's going to do this?
Right.
How long is this going to take? And we've all kind of spent the 4 years on a project, you know, and it didn't go anywhere. Mm-hmm. So it's like you have to really commit. But I like kind of what you're saying, which is you have kind of different partners on different projects. And if they're excited, then you're excited.
And it's probably not the most efficient way of doing it. And like my hope is that, you know, as things progress, that process will speed up a little bit, you know. But yeah, I mean, but this was one that, like, you know, even over the years, like even as other ideas came up or as I were working on other things, it was always one where I was like, I couldn't let it go. And I almost felt dumb for not wanting to let it go. Mm-hmm. Because that's always, you know, whenever I go into teach at a class or like I get brought in as, you know, as a guest or whatever, I'm always saying like, hey, like, you know, finish your thing, get it out there and go do the next thing. And then go do the next thing. And like, don't be precious and don't hang on to things. Just keep working and working. But it was like, you know, nothing was happening, but also nothing was happening because like, I wasn't doing anything like with it. Mm-hmm. Like I.
Sure. Yeah. Of those 10 years where you're, you know, developing it and before you've shot the movie, like at what point do you get serious enough to be like, okay, we've got a couple drafts in.
Yeah.
People seem to like this. I'm going to
attach a producer.
What's that
financing?
Yeah. Like how long was that basically?
Let's say 3 years in or something. We had the script done. Like it took a while, you know.
Sure.
Yeah.
So let's say 3 years in. Like I think at that point, like I didn't have a producer attached. Like I sent it to a few people that I knew, like other people, like people who I've worked with in the past. Or I mean, what's funny is like, not to name names, but like a lot of the people that I sent it to, like have since been Me Too'd and have had really like
you crazy. Win, Josh.
Yeah, that's right. So it's like, you know,
yeah, destroy all producers.
You know, yeah, I mean, I'm not one to think that like everything happens for a reason or whatever. Which we in the movie, like we literally have a joke about that or whatever. But in that case, like it's like, okay, man. Like at the time, I was bummed. Like, oh, this guy doesn't like my movie. Mm-hmm. And then he ends up becoming the producer who does all of Ben Shapiro's movies. So I'm like, okay, good. Bullet dodged. Right. For those of you guys with the access to Google, you can figure that out. But anyway, so I sent it to like the few people that I knew who like worked in development at certain places or, you know.
And you're repped, right? You have a manager and agent and stuff.
Yeah, I don't have an agent, but I have a manager. And yeah, like my manager, I don't think he really even saw it. Yeah, I don't think he really got it. He was just like, yeah. I don't know. What is this?
It is interesting that I feel like that happens all the time. It's like you write this thing and you're like, I'm going to give it to my manager. And my manager's going to help me make it. Your manager's like, what else you got?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was 100 years.
I had a movie that I was really passionate about. And my guy was just like, nope.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, okay. All right. Well,
I had a huge list of names that I sent it to a bunch of people. And Jonah was on that list as well. And, you know, he was the guy who really responded strongly. Like I texted, or I, cause we had worked on some stuff before.
Like you sent it to him as an actor or as a,
as an actor, just like, hey, what do you think? You know, I think I just sent him I had this movie that's like Barton Fink meets Evil Dead. You know, what do you, you know, and you'd be the star. And he like emailed me and said like, call me the fuck right now or something. So I called him.
And you had a relationship with him ahead of time before this.
Yeah. Right? Like we were friendly. I mean, it's funny. Like we've tried to parse out like how we knew each other. Okay. I'll let people in on a little secret trick that I like to do to maintain relationships with actors.
Those are our favorites. Yeah.
So one thing I would like to do, like when, if I'm doing a music video or something, or, you know, if I'm pitching on a commercial or whatever, like sometimes there'll be actors that I want to work with at some point. And so I'll reach out to them and be like, hey, would you be cool if I submitted your name for this thing? I mean, I knew Jonah like through the comedy world and stuff, but that was one of the the things that I had done is I had like tried submitting him for a couple of things, and it ended up not working out. But that's a good, it's a good trick, because then you get like, you sort of get this like muscle memory going with an actor. It's like, oh yeah, this is, you know.
And they might even say like, hey, right now I'm actually only doing this, or I'm going to go like,
sure, but that's
you get into this dialogue with them about what they're looking for. And then you're like, I have that, you know?
And so you're coming to them with a thing, you have a gift for them. You're not like, hey, will you, you know, it's like, I have this thing for you. Even if it's like, oh, it's just like a cameo in a music video or something. So I sent it to him and he called me and he was like, yeah, that sounds awesome. And I sent him the script and he was like, I love it. And, you know, I mean, unfortunately, like his name's not big enough that I could just immediately be like, just walk right up to studio.
And for listeners at home, just to kind of spell things out, we're talking about Jonah Ray. He had the Meltdown show on Comedy Central. He was the host of the Mystery Science Theater 3000 reboot on Netflix, you know, has been working. You know, like I've known who Jonah is for a long time. And I think like comedy fans certainly would be like, that guy, whether you know his name necessarily or not, whether you caught his half hour or whatever, like he's around for sure. So like in a certain sense, totally like so exciting. Awesome. This dude is great. He's really funny. He's on TV.
He
knows horror. It's like, of course. Perfect. He was in, he had a cameo in, a movie we had on last Christmas.
He was in Hatchet 3.
Christmas, Bloody Christmas is what I'm thinking of.
Oh, for sure.
He's like a guy who gets killed in that. Anyway, the point is, it's like, you know, the sort of actor you could be like, here are his credits. They're totally legit and real, and he is the lead in them. And also, Josh, to your point, still a little tricky to go get a green light, even though those credits are awesome, you know?
Yeah. People in the know who he is, but it's like, you know, it's gonna take a little bit of love and effort to convince a ton of people to like give us all this money or whatever.
But is he, I imagine he is like someone that knows everyone too.
And
so you could call like a Kumail Nanjiani and say, hey, Jonah Ray's doing the movie.
Exactly. I mean, he's just a super lovable guy. He was on the Nerdist podcast for years, which, you know, a little bit of me too business going on there too. Even if you're only looking at just that show, like he talked to like hundreds of like really wonderful people that he could easily reach out to and be like, hey, come play. But then also he did stand up for a long time, and he's a very beloved figure. So when he came on board, he had a couple of buddies who he's like, you know, I have these producer friends, and we tried getting it up, you know, to try getting something going with those guys, and it just, you know, wasn't the right time, just wasn't working or whatever. And so then a few years later, I was talking with my friend Russell Sansgiri, who's a producer. I was trying to get him to help me on this documentary. And anyway, we started talking about Israel Neighbors, and he kind of signed on to help figure it out. And then I think like during the pandemic, so Jonah and I, we started like doing revisions on the script. And then at a certain point, we just realized it kind of needed a little something extra. And so we brought on my friend Mike Benner, who he's a writer on Bob's Burgers. And Charlie is a funny guy, but like his sensibility is a bit more quirky and like esoteric maybe. And so it was like with Mike Benner, it was like, okay, this guy knows comedy. He knows, you know, he knows how to pack the script with jokes and whatever. And so we did a draft with him. And what was cool is that like, because we had Jonah, and like originally in the script, the lead character was a cartoonist. But you know, Mike was like, hey, like since we have Jonah, he's a musician, like why don't we lean into the music angle? And then that just kind of opened up all like so much of the movie just became about music, and oh yeah, this guy's making sounds and he's trying to, you know.
So it kind of unlocked a new layer to the character.
And so we kept attaching different people, or just like, you know, a lot of it was Jonah's friends like, hey, let's, you know, would you want to, you want to attach yourself to this or whatever.
And at this point, there's no budget. There's no shoot date.
Oh, it's funny. I think before Russell, like I met this like younger producer guy who is just like a real hotshot guy or whatever. And I was, he's like, all right, well, who do you have? And I was like, oh, you know, we have, you know, Jonah's on board. And I think I named a bunch of other people that like Jonah had. It's like, oh, yeah, Ron Funches said he would, you know, or whatever, like all these people. Sure. And he's like, cool. So like, where's your stars? You know, where's your celebrities? And I'm like, these are the most famous people I know. You know, like, so Jonah and I were like, we just keep texting back and forth. Like, you know, how do we do this? And he had an office in South Pasadena, and across the alley was Alex's office. And so Alex Winter. Yeah. So when Jonah and I would sit in like, do whatever writing sessions, every now and then we would be like, man, I wish we could just like get it to Alex. You know, maybe Alex could be a producer on this movie or something. Mm-hmm. Like, he's just right there. Like, because he made the movie Freaked. I don't know if you guys know Freaked, but like Freaked really shares a similar sensibility with what I wanted to do. There's a lot of prosthetics and a lot of crazy, very zany. And, you know, eventually during the pandemic, Jonah was like, you know what? Like, I think he feels hesitant about leaning on his celebrity friends for things.
Sure. Sure.
And so he was like, you know, but during the pandemic, he's just like, all right, forget it. Let's throw a Hail Mary. And so he sent it to Alex, and Alex was like, you know, he's like, I don't really do a lot of this stuff, you know? So like, if I come down with a case of scurvy, just know that it's not your fault or something. Mm-hmm. And so then a few days later, he like emailed us back, and he's like, well, the good news is I don't have scurvy. I really like this. What involvement would you want? And I was like, well, you know, like, we'd love to have you on as a producer. I mean, if you want, you could have a part, you know? And he's like, what about Vlad? And I'm like, yeah, let's do that. Vlad's like the lead, like bad guy or whatever, kind of bad guy. And so, yeah. So at that point, then, you know, he came on, and then he, you know, he has some higher powered reps at CAA and stuff like that. And, he's just like such a dialed in cool guy. Alex is like, he's like one of those guys I feel like that like wakes up at like 5 a.m. and like runs to the beach and then kills a whale and then brings it back or something.
Sure. Just, and he's like, hey, I've got some whale on the,
yeah.
Feel free.
He's just,
so did Alex help kind of finance it? Is that how?
No. So he came on, like, first step was like, he had notes for the script. So we brought in another writer, Jared Logan. And I mean, like, God bless all these guys. Like, they just, you know, they're working, like, we're all working for no money, but like, these guys are, you know, busting their humps. And so at a certain point, like, we got it really tight, we thought. Mm-hmm. And so the CAA sent it wherever they send things. Mm-hmm. and you know, no bites. And so eventually what happened is Jonah was talking with Joe Lynch, who director of he did Wrong Turn 2, did a movie called Everly.
Joe that's been on the podcast.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I guess so. No. Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, he just did Suitable Flesh.
Wait, Christmas, it's not Christmas, Bloody Christmas?
You're thinking Joe
Bigos. No, you're Joe Bigos.
Oh, yeah. Oh, sorry. Okay, sorry. Joe Lynch. Go on.
Yeah, Joe Lynch. Joe Lynch is the one that doesn't look like
he's in a metal band.
Sexy motorcycle Rasputin. Or whatever. So Joe was like, Joe's just like the most enthusiastic, like just energy, just he's great. So he likes, I think, just sent our like lookbook or whatever over to some people at Shudder, and they were like, yeah, let's talk. And then we set up a meeting, and we did a Zoom, and they were like, oh, we should just get our checkbook out right now, you know. Mm-hmm. Which felt very good. And then, you know, then it became an issue of just, I think, I don't know what it was, but it took like a year to just get like this,
For them to get their checkbook out.
Yeah. It took a while to get was, like,
let's dig on that a little bit. Was it just ironing out contracts? Was it just like you emailing your lawyer every couple weeks being like, hey man, what's going on? Right. Or like,
I think it sounded like there was a lot of just like shuffling, you know, reorganization.
I see.
Within the, gotcha. You know,
gotcha. Because Shudder did have, I think, famously a handful of pretty big layoffs.
Yeah.
A handful of times. And so
some of the people we'd been talking to were then, you know, in those deadline articles or whatever. It's like,
yeah,
oh, shit.
Yeah, totally.
And so, you know, it's like, but they kept it reassuring us like, no, we really like this, really want to do it. You know, just hang on or whatever. And so we did, and we used that time to really dial in the script. And through that time too, we started getting other people on board. Like we got, Ryan Kattner, who did our music with Brett Morris. You know, like he signed on to do the soundtrack, and Gabe Bartalos did our prosthetics, and Charlie, the first writer, had worked with Gabe, and Gabe was always like, just always in the back of our mind as we were writing it. Eventually it was go time, and then from there, yeah, we just started like, yeah, building the team.
Yeah.
So how can you tell us a little bit about how the budget worked? Like, is there a certain amount of money that they make movies for? And
right. I was going to say like two things that I did that I feel like was helpful was, you know, obviously we did a cool lookbook, that I'm quite proud of, but the thing I'm more proud of is I made, like a sizzle trailer.
Mm-hmm. Oh, right. I think it's on your website.
Yeah. I think it is on my website.
Oh, awesome.
It's like a Rip-O-Matic.
Yeah. And what was cool about that was just that I know people have varying opinions about Rip-O-Matics. You know, the main opinion being like, yeah, right, like your movie is going to be an assemblage of like the best moments of 20 of the best movies, you know.
Sure, yeah.
But for me it was nice to like to sort of put those pieces together and see it in motion and sort of see the tone of it kind of come to life. I'm like, oh, this is actually going to work. So back to your point about money. It seems like it seems like their number is around like 1 to 2 million is what they make these movies for. Probably often less than that.
And their release. They own all the rights and they do the distribution.
Yeah. Also. Yeah. Yeah.
And do you share in profits or anything? Or how does that?
I don't think so. I don't think so. I mean, I signed a bunch of contracts because it's just the sort of thing where it's like, you know, I would ask questions and then it would be like, dude, you just got to sign this. You know?
Sure. Yeah. You're like, in perpetuity, could that be negotiated?
Like all other galaxies? Like,
yeah.
They're like, we can keep it to, yeah.
Milky yeah. How about just yeah. this one? How about Earth?
Is that, had you done a feature before this?
I had. I did a movie called Contracted Phase 2. Contracted colon phase 2, actually.
Colons.
It was the hotly desired sequel to the original film Contracted. That was like a, I think the budget for that was like 200 or something like that. But that was a movie that was super random. Like Scott Eric England made a movie called Contracted. Imagine like mumblecore leading up to the beginning of a zombie outbreak, which is basically like this woman, you know, keeps like bleeding and like gross stuff starts happening to her. It's like a Cronenberg mumblecore.
It's the part of your phase two. So you're like, oh, zombies are here now, but they're still talking about Yeah. Whether they should finish his dissertation or not.
Well, I mean, like that movie was like the hook of it was, hey, this is the part of the movie that everybody else edits out. You know, right. For better or for worse, that's what it is.
And do you feel like that, like when you were pitching your movie, when you were pitching,
yeah, was it helpful? Neighbors, was
yeah, to, yeah, yeah. Have had that under your belt or not?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, so like the it's tough because like I went into that one, you know, behind the eight ball. There's like some good metaphor that I, you know, on my heels, whatever. I went into it like at a disadvantage because it's like. I'm doing a sequel that the director of the first one, like, was not excited. It was like not authorized. Like, he didn't want this one. He didn't write it. It was kind of clear that it was like, I don't say like a money grab, but it was just like, it was not done in the best spirit of like, let's make this a good movie. And you know, everybody, the performances were great. Like, everybody was great who worked on it, but like, you know, it's tough because it's like, you want to have your best foot forward. You want your first movie, air quotes, to be something notable. And because that's how our society
to
works.
To be your debut, right?
Like, yeah, it's always like, oh, the, you know.
Sure. From the director of.
Top five, you know, first films or whatever it is, you know?
Yeah. Like Slam Dance. They only take first films, right?
Mm-hmm. Right. And so it's like, but I'm like, what am I going to do? Not make a movie, like, because it was this sort of thing where it was like through a friend of a friend, like, hey, do you want to make a zombie movie? I'm like, yeah, sure, let's do it. So but for me, what the way I really look at it is that it put me over a threshold. Like, I always think of it like that, where it's like, you know, have you made a movie? Yes, okay, it ticks that box. Like, is the movie great? Like, no. Are there awesome,
have I heard of it? Yeah, sure.
Yeah, like, are there awesome like sequences with like really cool graphic, you know, weird, like people sneezing blood and like really cool music. Yeah. That has that. So anyway, so I do think it helped, like, between my existing reel of just like all my commercials and music videos, and then knowing that I had finished a feature, you know, and then just Alex and Jonah's trust in me. Yeah, I think it was enough for them to be like, okay, like, this guy's not
right. Josh can direct it.
Yeah. It's not that big of a risk.
We'll give him $1 to $2 million.
So yeah. Let me point out something though, Josh, because I feel like you've talked a lot about Goop and kind of like these genre movies and all that stuff. And on your music video side, some of the notable artists you've worked with are Meghan Trainor, Carly Rae Jepsen, JoJo Siwa. Yeah. You know, you're a comedy guy. You've got this kind of like cool pop sensibility. Clearly you can work with these people. Meghan Trainor, Carly Rae Jepsen, JoJo Siwa, those are all artists that have very explicit visual identities. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It is pure like bubblegum in a really cool way that would be very exciting.
Come on, JoJo Siwa has some very harsh head hair bows.
Yeah. But they have very clear visual identities,
right?
In a certain aesthetic,
right.
So, but different than Destroy All Monsters, which is, you know, creatures and, like you said, goop and practical and stuff. So does that come up in the conversation?
I think those videos just like, who knows, but it seems to me like having that level of gloss and finish that it's okay, this guy can create a good image or whatever.
And obviously I'm cherry picking. There's lots of other things that have more of a quote unquote edge.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. You did direct the human sextapede.
Oh, I did. Yeah. No, that was from a music video for this band called Cheerleader. You know, it's like, I was always like, that's kind of where my heart is. It's a lot of that just sort of like, just excessive, like dumb, Mad Magazine kind of stuff or whatever. And so like, you know, every now and then I would be able to do something in that world. Like, I did a video for this guy, Felix Cartel. It was one of these like no budget music videos, but it was like old people doing drugs is like the pitch. And you know, it's one of the ones that like a lot of people really liked. Like, even though it was like no budget, it's just like old people, like, you know, drinking Four Loko and stuff. And you know, like, so there's there I had I've been able to sort of like put that fingerprint on or whatever, like here and there. Like I did a video for The Offspring where it was like clown fight club. Mm-hmm. It was just like a lot of gore and, you know, heads falling off. And, you know, I've had a chance to sort of have those moments and things.
Mm-hmm. So you combine them, right? You can say like, okay, yes, this is the polish and the, you know, the professionalism, quote unquote, of some of these videos, and also the gonzo sensibility of this video. And then, ta-da. And also I've made a feature.
But I think that's how I like to think of it. But I think ultimately it was like, oh, Alex and Jonah like this guy. Mm-hmm. He's done a movie. He seems like a grown up. Mm-hmm.
Let's go. Do this movie. It's his. So with either him or not, no one.
And also knowing too, I mean, it doesn't hurt that Alex is already like a very, successful director and established. And so I'm sure in the back of their head, they're like, okay, well, you know, if things go off the rails, like Alex can maybe not step in, but just sort of help.
Sure. Keep tabs on
wheels or whatever. But you're right. I mean, that's been a difficult thing where it's like, I'll take jobs that come to me.
Sure.
If I can do them, not in like a, I don't know, almost like a journeyman kind of like, especially, you know, like you guys have kids, like,
sure.
I think I know a lot of like younger directors who don't have kids and don't have a wife, and they're just like, yeah, man. And they may or may not have a trust fund, and like they can pick and choose and like have this like hyper curated resume. I do think at some point I made a concerted effort to like point my ship in one direction as much as I could. Like obviously like work would come in and I'd have to do it, but I was like, okay, I kind of want to like just aim.
What were you aiming for?
Like a Sam Raimi, Edgar Wright, but by way of Troma, you know,
Goop is what you're saying.
Because I just love exploitation movies and stuff. Like, let's make, like, what if I made an exploitation movie, but it was like made with my smart, like, comedy friends? You know, what would that look like? It was always kind of, but I really just like kind of really dug into horror too. Like, I always liked horror I've liked horror for a long time, but I think there was a moment when there was kind of like a, all right, I'm going for this. And, you know, I sort of like, I became friends with some people who did like a horror podcast, because I becoming friends with like the horror community. I started going to horror trivia. Like I just sort of like ingrained myself in that world. And partially as a strategy, but then also partially because like I just nerded out. It's like, oh, these are my people. Like I just, the more time I spend around them, I'm like, oh, this is, you know, it's fun to talk about people who love Basket Case or whatever, the Basket Case exists.
Well, you know, you're not the first filmmaker I think we've talked to who's kind of shared this sort of mentality, right? Where like, we talk to horror directors that they're in one of two baskets. They're either like, oh, I cared about Basket Case from age 7 on and like I'm a maniac for horror and that's all I ever wanted. And then, you know, people who kind of come to it in a different stage in their lives, right? Like maybe they're comedy directors, comedy and horror have plenty in common, all of that. And even Jason Blum talks about coming to horror late in life. He started as an indie filmmaker. And you know, and as a person who's got something horror adjacent in the works, you know, there's a part of me that wonders, like, is it just that, well, this is the thing that people are making and is still profitable, right? Like there aren't that many indie movie avenues out there.
Right.
We were talking about this beforehand off mic.
Yeah.
In terms of your kind of sense of the industry and how you got this movie made and all, you said you've got a lot of other stuff going.
Yeah.
You know, do you feel like horror was the right move for you? And if so, would you recommend it to other filmmakers or not?
Yeah, I think it was totally the right move for me. I think nobody else should ever make any other things ever because they're all my competition. is how I, you know, you're a bad person. Like when I hear that somebody like watching the In Memoriam, I'm like, yeah, get out of the way.
Yeah, sure. Kind of you drink their milkshake is what you're
that's
saying.
Right. Yeah. But I wish that wasn't true. But I mean, horror, like but it's true. It's like the budgets for movies. It's like, you know, we're talking about it off air as well. Like, you know, it's like either movies are $200 million or they're like $200. You know what I mean? And there's like no in between. And the only people who are making things at a low budget that seem to have any sort of like,
sure,
shot, whatever, yeah, you know, chance, move, yeah, the needle is horror stuff. And it's like, you know, I mean, I always say it's like they don't have like romantic comedy conventions. You know, mm-hmm, what I mean? But they have horror conventions.
They
and
did. It's like, in LA, okay, it was called Rom-Com Fest. It only lasted 1 year. It was great.
It was, yeah, just when they left, there was just like a bunch of like binders of books all strewn because people, sure, kept bumping into each other. And,
yeah, yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. God.
Yeah.
I didn't see, exactly, there.
But that was always, you know, it's like it all made sense in the same way that like when I was in film school and I decided to really get into music videos, like, it was just sort of like, okay, I'm here and I want to go there, but I don't know if I can't get from A to Z, but I think I can get from A to G or something. Mm-hmm. And so that was like, okay, I'm just going to do music videos. So at a certain point it was like, okay, this is what the terrain is. This is what's happening. I mean, lucky for me, like I like adore all those kind of movies. And the more I dug in, the more
you got into it.
Yeah. I got into it. I mean, cause I grew up in like kind of a Christian household and I went to like a Christian college, mm-hmm, and, you know, so that like when I got exposed to certain things, it was always very, very charged and kind of salacious and, mm-hmm, mm-hmm, you know,
contraband.
My experience with all of like the, you know, the big franchises was just like through the posters, like, mm-hmm, Freddy, like I very distinctly like remember my first time seeing Freddy. It was like, you know, there was a video store that was closed and I could just see the poster on a door in the background. Like, I think about that all the time. Mm-hmm. It's an area. There's just so much exciting, cool stuff. You know, it's, I mean, I remember too, like when I was a kid, I remember reading a book that Roger Corman wrote, and that like made a big impact on me. You know, and then also like Tarantino was a huge influence, and you know, he talks a lot about that, about this idea of grindhouse movies, of these exploitation movies. Like the whole idea is that like you don't have a star, you don't, you know, the star is the guy in the rubber suit, mm-hmm, you know, or the concept or whatever. And so, you know, that's what's like, I have a script that I love, but it's like the story of like these homeless, these homeless black kids who like have to move in with their uncle or something. It's like, mm-hmm, you know, it's like completely, yeah, like I love it. And it is totally a me movie, like, cause I'm a father and it's kind of a movie about like a guy having to take care of these kids. But it's, I don't know if that movie's ever going to get made because it's like, who's going to fund that? Who's going to watch it? Whereas like, if I come up with another like crazy horror thing, like there are places for it. And like you were saying, you know, we're talking about Shudder. Like Shudder, I feel like, is the new, you know, what is it, AIP, right, or whatever, like the new Roger Corman, right, in so many ways, you know. And they, like, to their credit, like they really didn't have that many notes. Like, mm-hmm, you know, I don't want to blow up their spot or whatever, but like they just kind of let us make the movie. Mm-hmm. And hey, make sure it's in focus and it's this long, and, you know,
as long as it's 9x16, you know, vertical.
Yeah, right. Yeah, as long as we can make it vertical so people can watch it, you know.
Let me ask some practical stuff. Sorry, Orin, did you have something?
Oh, I think I was going to ask the same thing. Like, how many days did you shoot?
I feel like it was like around 16 or 17. Mm-hmm. It wasn't a lot.
So definitely like indie film style.
Yeah.
You're making. And with all the crazy prosthetics and goo and everything, mm-hmm, 16 days.
Yeah.
Was that scary?
Yeah, it was kind of, it's a little terror. Yeah. A little scary, I guess.
Like there's all the puppetry, like all this stuff, right? I mean, a ton of practical effects.
Yeah. I felt pretty confident going into it, especially too, having done Contracted too, it was like, having done that experience, like it, like one of the things that it illuminated for me was what a marathon making movies is. And how, because like if you're just doing a commercial or a music video, it's like you work all the way up to that one day and you do it and then, you know, you sleep for a week. But this, it's like, no, you got, we're shooting for, you know, three or four weeks or whatever.
And was there, did you do a lot of visual effects or were you like really intentionally trying to do everything in camera?
There's definitely, there's a ton of effects in it. A lot of it is like wire removal and like, you know,
so like, the practical stuff.
Yeah. So we have like, you know, these intestines playing the drums. And so we'd have like my friend Bill, you know, like hiding under the drums with these sticks. Bill Watterson, give a shout out to him.
He's been on the podcast.
Yeah,
so, Dave Made Amaze.
Yeah. That's what was awesome is like he came on board to do some puppeteering. My buddy Ryan Spindell, who did the Mortuary Collection, is just like an insanely talented guy. And he shot some second unit stuff for me, which is it's like some of the best looking stuff in the movie. Like just some little like Edgar Wright snap zooms to things and stuff.
And for your crew and stuff, did you try to bring like your friends from a commercial world and music, like the people that you've gotten them jobs and now kind of hook me up with like, you know, $200 a day.
It was a little bit like that, but it's tough. Cause a lot of those people that I came up with, they're just like, they're already gone. They're like on shows and like doing huge movies now and stuff. So it was, but like our DP Will Stone, who's dating our friend Amanda Mortimer, you know, he and I had met at some point, like just as friends. And I did a commercial with him as sort of a trial run or whatever. And we just really hit it off and he's just hilarious. And what's funny about him is like, he doesn't really like horror. So I was like, okay, great. Like you're making a Fincher movie or whatever. Like you're making the movie that you're making. Cause I don't want it to be like wacky, you know, like it's kind of fun to have somebody who doesn't know the genre to be working in it. Our wardrobe person, Fee Baker,
I know Fee.
We have worked with her on a bunch of things, but yeah, I mean, it was a lot of like pulling friends and people that I've worked with a bunch. And then, you know, absolutely like, I'm indebted to both Alex and Jonah, like Jonah, you know, Jonah was able to get us a Camille Nanjiani for a cameo. And, you know, again, like people just love Jonah. So like, we were able to, like Thomas Lennon was in the movie.
And when those guys come, do you need to like get them a trailer and do all this like big budget
stuff?
No,
Thomas was just like, cause he's just a super cool dude. Like, and he's just down to play. Like, I guess like he showed up and he was like, he told Jonah, he's like, hey, on the way here, I read the script. It's really good. Nice. And he's just that kind of guy.
Four car accidents.
Yeah. Right. Well, I mean, like he flew from New York or wherever he was from. But again, it was a lot of, it was very much this camaraderie, this sort of like, let's get the band together. My buddy Hank Friedman edited the movie. And Hank is a guy who I've known forever and has cut a bunch of my stuff. And
is Shudder giving you any sort of production resources or
no?
Finance and distribution.
Just finance and I mean, I imagine if we needed somebody, I'm sure they, you know, could recommend people or whatever. You know, but luckily, like we just, we had all those guns under our pocket.
Right under your pocket. So now that the movie's done, it's out. You can see it on Shudder. Like for your next film, would you go back to Shudder and try to do another movie? Would you try to kind of
I'd love to. I think it makes sense. Like the couple things that I'm working on, I will like present to them. Cause I feel, I want to say I'm loyal, but maybe I'm lazy. You know, but like, I like sticking with the team.
And you know, so it's funny.
I'd love to work with Shudder, but
Sure. I mean, why not? Also, like to our earlier point, it's like hard to get a movie made. So if you've got
yeah.
good relationship somewhere. Let's go for it. I think also, you know, we talk about a previous guest has a new YouTube channel. This guy, Dean Peterson, is making a lot of videos. We should have him on the show again soon. But anyway, he just had a new YouTube video out that basically makes the point, like, a lot of filmmakers will make their debut feature and they'll be like, I gotta level up. I gotta, you know, the next one's gotta be bigger and better with more famous people and this or that or whatever. And then it takes them 8 years to make another friggin' movie.
Yeah.
And all of the goodwill and all of the momentum that you had going has just evaporated, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Every festival programmer you knew is moved on to a different one or burnt out or whatever. Your crew's moved on, like all of that stuff. And, you know, he posits, like, just make another movie the same size. If you could do that, do it again, and then you know, you get your wheels turning. And I don't know that I necessarily agree note for note with that advice.
Yeah,
but the spirit of it is dead on. You know, just keep going, right?
Well, there's some I think a lot about, like, Daniel Scheinert of the Daniels, who, like, after their first movie, Swiss Army Man, you know, he went off and made a smaller movie, The Adventures of Dick Long or whatever. I imagine the budget was, like, much less. And, but there's something nice about getting just, it's that sort of soft, like, shaking the sophomore jinx a little bit. Like,
let me ask, like, just a straight up ruthless question.
Yeah.
While you're making the movie,
you're
a workaday filmmaker, you're doing music videos and commercials and all that stuff. Are you, you know, obviously not while you're shooting, but, like, while you're in post, are you working other jobs? Like, what, how do you juggle that sort of fallout afterwards?
I was shooting, like, I shot another commercial, like, leading right up to the shoot of our movie, which my, which both producers were not so happy about. The one on the commercial and then the one in the movie. And then, yeah, like, right after, like, I was right back into writing treatments for stuff. And I mean, and it's tough to, like, honestly, like, between, like, last year just sucking in general because of the strikes and whatever, and then, you know, the pandemic, it's like I definitely had to take a lot of, like, little weird, like, editing jobs or, like, just random. Like, I have a buddy at the Lincoln Project who every now and then he's like, hey, we need something animated. And I'm like, okay, you know, and I'm like, I mean, not,
it could be worse, right?
But I'm like, I'm not, I don't fancy myself an animator, but, like, I know my way around After Effects and Final Cut, or not Final Cut.
Vegas.
I'll be brutally honest. Like, the week that, like, my movie came out, and we were doing, like, big premieres, and, like, Weird Al came to the premiere, which is cool. Like, on that same week, I was, like, trying to sign up to be a DoorDash driver. I was just like, what do I?
Yeah, you need money.
And you're delivering to Weird Al, and you're like,
oh, man. He's like, do I know you? And I'm like,
putting a mustache on.
But it's one of those, you know, it's like every, I feel like it's like maybe every 7 years or something. So, like, it'll hit this kind of lull where, where my wife's like, hey, what do you think about
law school?
What do you think about getting a job? And I'm like, I have a job. I just don't get paid for it. You know, but this, I mean, it's tough. And that's what's crazy, too. It's like, you know, would I want to make another Shudder movie? Like, yeah, absolutely. Because I like the freedom I had, and I like the pipeline, and I like, you know, there's so much about it that I like, but it's like, I don't know how anybody survives financially on these things.
But you do, but you are like a filmmaker that survives making a movie here, a commercial there, a music video there.
Yeah. And I've been able to call, you know, I live in South Pasadena. Like, we, you know, I'm putting my kids through school. Like, I'm doing it. We're doing it. I mean, a huge thanks to my wife, who is a therapist. You know, so she has, like, some relatively consistent income, but it's always tough, and becomes really demoralizing too. Like, that's what's crazy about this industry is you'll go from, like, oh man, I'm like, I'm the king of the world, to just like, mm-hmm. oh no, it's not working. My phone's not ringing. How come I'm not yeah. getting email? Like, mm-hmm. I have to change the font on my website. Like, what's, you know, like you start second guessing everything about yourself. Yeah,
yeah. And then, I'm always like, AT&T, what's, I don't think I have any reception because no one's called me all day. Like, that's right?
weird. Yeah. Spectrum must be out. Yeah. So luckily things are trucking along, but it's always crazy. It's always tough.
Well, let me ask, because the movie's been out for a little bit now. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like it has, or even before it had come out, could you use it in any way? Could you leverage it to, like, you know, change the way that you're pitching on things? Like, oh, I just had a new movie that came out. Like,
right.
Did you throw the trailer into the mix of
a commercial pitch or something?
Yeah, or just in general. Like, did it help your career as well?
Yeah, or even do you send it to agents and managers or production companies?
I should do that. I'm really bad at
LinkedIn, you know.
Yeah, I'm bad at all that stuff. I should probably take a class or something. Like, yeah, I mean, I think just generally, yeah, like
if you find one, let me know, Josh.
Yeah, yeah. But it's, I mean, it's obviously it's an awesome flex, and like, you know, working on shooting a commercial and then being like, oh, you know, oh, what do you have going on next? Like, oh, I'm shooting this movie. You know what I mean? Like, it helps give them confidence. Oh, this guy's mm-hmm. other people believe in
sure.
him. I know enough people who've gone down this road that I know that it's not going to immediately open doors. Mm-hmm. The next one's going to be just as hard. I mean, I hope it will be easier. It's hard for me to know, like, the reach of the movie and who's watching it and stuff. But I think there's also, like, just on a personal level, I'm sure you guys have gone through this too. Like, it's just, it's hard. It's really hard for me to be happy where I am. I'm always looking up. And of course, like, whatever level I'm at now used to be up, you know?
Sure, sure. Yeah.
And so,
the old you hadn't made a movie.
Yeah.
And now you've made two, right?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And so, I'm like, oh, you know, but I know people who've made tons of movies who are like, watch the Oscars, like, growling, sure. you know, how come I'm not there? Right. So,
or the, like, people that make like a movie every year and are like jealous that you get to make commercials, you know?
Right. Yeah. So it's hard for me, but I'm trying to just like enjoy it and enjoy the process. Did you guys have Jordan Brady on?
Yeah, yeah. Sure. We know Jordan.
Like,
we respect the process for sure.
But his, like, his respect the process, like, that really, like, changed my brain chemistry on how I look at this stuff, where it's like, okay, like, doing the treatment, that's the job. Like, doing the call, that's the job. Like, sitting in the, with an editor, like, you know, all that stuff. Trying to really enjoy that aspect, like, oh, coming up with ideas, that's part of the job, and not putting so much on
the directing part, on set, talking to actors. Yeah. yeah. One of the first lessons I learned when I moved to LA was, like, I met this actor that had worked a ton. Mm-hmm. And he told me, he's like, the number one requirement of being a successful actor in LA is to enjoy auditioning.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, that's like 95% of what I do. And if I'm going to be bummed unless I'm on set acting, then I'm never going to be happy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But if I enjoy the chase, you know, then I can be happy. And I think to me, we talk about it a lot on the podcast, but that's why I talk about treatments and pitches. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Matt, you're like, you had a good phase, maybe making a little bit of a comeback, talking about networking and meeting and staying in touch with people, and like those things, like, if we can make those fun for us, then then the icing on top is, like, you get to, like, make a shot list and talk to an actor.
Right. Well, that's the thing too about networking, right? Like, there's something really, like, sleazy about it, or feels like there's the potential for sleaze. But I keep reminding myself, I'm like, you know, like when I sort of like injected myself into this horror trivia world, let's say,
sure.
you know, there's part of me that's like, oh, this feels Machiavellian. But then there's also part of me that's like, no, like, I like these people and I like this stuff, and we're all here trying to make the same things. You know, so let's just enjoy this relationship. Like, you know.
Yeah. I think networking, it's funny because it gets such a weird, bad rap, but, like, a couple things. One, like, if you fake it, everyone's can sniff it out and it doesn't work. Sure. Right.
Yeah.
So like, if you were like, yes, I love horror movies as well, you know, it would be like, okay, who's this Josh guy? Whatever.
Right. Yeah.
But also, and this is less at like a trivia event or something like that, but like, I think when we were younger, there were like a lot more like, just like so-and-so in Hollywood meetups or whatever. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We're all there to meet people, to make things together. And so, yes, it's like kind of like transparent. It's like nakedly, it's embarrassing because it's like, we don't know any better way to just meet other people to make things with.
Right.
But like, those connections still have to be genuine and real. Otherwise they just don't pan out. You know what
exactly.
I mean?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Any other kind of like last lesson that you kind of learned from this experience with Shudder and with Destroy All Neighbors? Something you would tell you before you started, or something you tell new filmmakers?
I mean, I think just being prepared. Like we really drilled, you know, we really worked really hard on storyboarding a lot of the more difficult bits. I just think that was really helpful, as much as I didn't necessarily want to do it, or you know, but like it required a lot of the effects. It's just like, okay, well, how
are you gonna do it? Yeah,
how are we gonna do it? Like, okay, where is he gonna,
how are these, you know, intestines,
Alex,
gonna play
Alex's
screen?
Head is sitting on the couch, so where's his body? Like, oh, how do we, you know, all that stuff.
Did you feel locked in then? Like, was there room for spontaneity? Well, kind of with all of these practical effects, right? Like, you know that it's gonna work for the angle you planned,
right?
Or you hope, you know, you're as confident as you can be that it's going to work that way. But like, we've all been in situations where you're like, ah, dang, I didn't think if I just moved the camera three paces to the left, it would be much better.
Right.
Did you feel locked in? Was there room to improvise or no?
I think it gave me the confidence or whatever, the assuredness to then improvise. Like, I think because we had it dialed in, then we could play around with it. But that's also the kind of movie that it was. And then also just, I guess, my style or the way that I like working.
You shoot with one camera?
Yeah, one camera. My thing with like shooting two cameras, but I guess if you're doing like action or something where you really need it, it's useful. But for me, it's like twice as much footage that I spent half as much caring about, you know. It's sure. Like,
yeah, yeah.
It's
50% as good and you have 200% of it. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah.
I mean, I think if you do improv, it can be helpful, but you know, but how many of us actually
I like to shoot improv? I'll say, like, I used to call it one and a half cameras. Like, we had a camera around and like you could maybe get like a locked off wide, or like an operator could like snipe off inserts, but like, it's really the main camera.
Yeah.
And then maybe you can pick something off if you can.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To me, it's the only time. Yeah. Either it's something you only get one take of, or it's like a news setup or a game show or like something that it makes sense that you would shoot it with more than one camera. So what's next? Are you pitching on commercials and music videos again? Working, wrestling on a feature?
I have a commercial coming up this week that I'm shooting for FEMA, which will be pretty fun. And
it's one of the top federal.
Yeah. I did what commercial with them before. Yeah. They're surprisingly like open to creative stuff.
Oh, really? You
know? That's cool. That's
awesome. So we'll see. So that's happening. I've been doing a documentary about the comedian Gallagher
for a long
time.
I saw that.
And so that is coming to a close. Like, I mean, he passed away last year. So, you know, now our movie has an ending, and I'm looking forward to being done with it, but then also to having people see it and, you know, but it's again, talking about like how to brand yourself. Like, I'm a little bit worried, I guess, about like, okay, I did this horror comedy and now I'm doing a documentary. Like, what, like,
well, a Gallagher documentary, though, I think is the crucial difference.
Exactly.
There. Yeah.
But then
you
beyond that,
to the screening with like watermelon seeds in your beard.
Yeah. <right. laughs> But beyond that, it's like, you know, I have a couple. Yeah, I have these scripts that are in various stages of undress. That I'm, gonna start pitching around. I guess, I don't know. It just, who knows. one credo that I've always tried to live by, and I believe it was like this painter, Red Grooms. No, not Red Grooms. Red. I don't know. It doesn't matter. It was basically like I make art for myself and then for my friends and then for people I want to be my friends. Mm-hmm. And I think ultimately that's all you can really do to make yourself happy, right? So it's like if you're trying to like make Jennifer Lawrence like you hang out with you, like that's a fool's errand. But if it's like, oh, I want to make a thing that like my friends will think is funny, that's more doable and like genuinely more satisfying. Unless Jennifer Lawrence is out there and like wants to hang out, like
I
can clear my schedule. But
well, on that note, can Jennifer Lawrence or any other person who's listening to this podcast follow along, keep tabs on what you got going, Josh?
Yeah, I mean, I'm on Instagram as the best Josh Forbes because somebody else took my name, so I had to
the best Josh Forbes too.
Yeah,
just kidding.
After the Gallagher documentary, my brother will take over that name. But so I'm there on Instagram. I mean, I got off of Twitter, so that's it. And then my website, joshforbes.com. Yeah, I guess I'm on Facebook too, but whatever.
Sure. Awesome. Yeah. Well, do you have a few moments longer to endorse with us real quick?
Of course.
Unpaid endorsements.
Josh, earlier you mentioned that you premiered at Vidiot, which is a local movie theater in Eagle Rock, if you want to get specific. But I went today with my daughter to go see Frozen, the family-friendly matinee at noon. Mm-hmm. And it was really, truly wonderful. It was really... Vibes were great. The staff was incredible. It's got an awesome, video rental store attached. You know, they have like an awesome little video at the beginning talking about how they're trying to keep film accessible and like at a fair price point for everybody. Mm-hmm. And it just like made me really happy, right? Because I think that it's easy to get kind of bummed on the state of cinema and the way that, you know, movies are the direction that they're heading in. Next year's going to be pretty rough. There's like blah, blah, blah. Anyway, movies are alive and well at places like Vidiot's. And I think if you're lucky enough to live in a town that has a repertory theater or an independent theater, go out and support it. Those communities are thriving. And I think that maybe movie theaters are going to have a similar sort of reinvention the way that bookstores have, right? Mm-hmm. Like there were Borders and Barnes and Nobles and all of those, and frankly I friggin love those chains, like no disrespect to those mega stores, but the ones that survived were those small independent booksellers that found a niche where they could cater to a community and become cultural centers. And I think that might happen with movies as well. And either way, if you're in LA, go to Vidiot's, and if you're not in LA, go find the closest movie theater that is doing what they're doing. That's my endorsement, basically.
There's a line in their little video at the beginning that stuck with me where it says, like, be your own algorithm. Mm-hmm. Come into the video store. Like, that really hit me hard. Because so much of what as a filmmaker, I'm always trying to, like, differentiate myself from other people or, like, try and forge some other path and have different influences. But it's hard when you turn on, whatever, Netflix, and it's like, so hearing that was like, oh yeah, that's important. I'd also give a shout out to Videotech, which was in South Pasadena and now is in Highland Park, another video store. So
awesome.
Yeah. Keep it alive.
Cool.
So first off, I was going to endorse the band Yes, because my movie is about prog rock. I was into prog before making the movie, but like I really dug in and I am kind of obsessed with the band Yes. And, I have gotten a turntable, and now, like I used to like look down my nose at vinyl people. Mm-hmm. So I'm just like, oh yeah, hey look, I can listen to that on my phone. Mm-hmm. And I really there's no real justification for why I love it, but I love now going to these record stores and flipping through. My other endorsement is I've been playing this video game Disco Elysium. Do you know this game?
I started it and then I had a kid and yeah. I haven't been able to play since.
That was your first. That was your first mistake. There's just something about it that's really. So it's kind of like, it feels a little bit like a role playing game, but it's kind of more like a little more like a adventure game, like kind of like
a LucasArts sort of
game. Like a Monkey Island. Yeah. But it just has the weirdest point of view and vibe, and like it's very kind of sad, and it's this weird sort of like future that's really dystopian, and I don't know, there's just something so like beautiful about it, and like I kind of don't want the game to ever end. There's something kind of clunky about it.
Computer or PlayStation?
I'm playing another PlayStation. And cool. It's funny because normally if I play a video game, like I usually play something that I can listen to a podcast while I'm playing, because I have ADHD and I'm trying to avoid listening to the inner voices in my head. But this one, I like, you really have to be fully immersed in, and Disco Elysium. It's funny. It's kind of dirty. There's some raunchy, weird, and it's just bizarre, but I'm really digging it. So there you go. The Band, yes. And Disco Elysium.
Kaplan, what you got, buddy?
I got just some, you know, a couple of random ones. I hit up your, you know, just some callbacks. I hit up your Dyson Service Center.
Mm-hmm. How'd it go? Mm.
Went okay. I mean, the guy was like disappointed with the way I take care of my vacuum cleaner. He's like, you clean the filter? I'm like, yeah. He's like, how often? I was like, I don't know, every 6 months. Like, every 6 months, this guy. You gotta look at that every month. He's like, the whole time he's talking to me, he's like opening my vacuum cleaner. He's like, whoa, what the hell were you vacuuming? I'm like, I don't know, like drywall dust. That he's like, what's all this white stuff? I'm like, what are you accusing me of? He's like, you know, cleaning my filter. He's like, so what's the problem? I'm like, well, when I put my hand like on in front of the look at how weak the suction is. Mm-hmm. And he's like, yeah, you put your hand in front of a vacuum, of course it's going to turn off. That's what it's supposed to do. I'm like, I know, I just felt like it was working better before. And I was like, and it only runs for like 5 minutes. He's like, what, on max mode? I'm like, yeah. He's like, what are you? That's how long it's supposed to run. Basically, I left there with the same vacuum cleaner. He's like, didn't do anything except for like clean my filter a little, but I'm gonna try it out again this week, and I'll let you know if it
let me know.
It was a very different experience than yours, which was
I walked in, mine was busted. 5 minutes later, it was.
They offered you an IPA and shoe shine.
Yeah, a little massage. It was great.
Floyd's or something.
Yeah,
That's not even an endorsement, but we are watching Mr. and Mrs. Smith, which I'm enjoying. It's you know, Hiro Murai did like the first couple episodes, and it has that kind of Atlanta-ish vibe. You know, Donald Glover is also in it. It's fun. It's kind of slow burn, but pretty good. Mm-hmm. And then I saw this commercial that I really loved that I met with my commercial rep. So they're like the people, you know, we had Nikki Weiss on, who's like the Midwest rep of Art Class, the production company I'm with. And then I met with the East Coast reps and the West Coast rep, Simpatico and Hero Management, on Friday. And I told them about this commercial I had just seen, which has like become my new favorite commercial of the year. And it's a Manscaped commercial. Do you guys know Manscaped? They make like razors for manscaping.
Mm-hmm.
And this one, it's called The Boys. Have you seen this commercial?
Mm-mm.
So just go to YouTube, type Manscaped The Boys. And it's like just my dream commercial. It's a visual effects driven commercial, but like very seamless, like lo-fi VFX that you can do on like After Effects. No, but it's just kind of expertly crafted in terms of like visually, it's funny, it's cinematic, and it's product driven. And to me, that's like, you know, there's so many amazing commercials where the product is like so lost, you know, it's such an afterthought. And those are the ones that win awards. And then there's the ones that we get hired to do, which is like more product. Right. Need to see the sandwich. Whatever.
Manscaped.
Yeah.
Can you manscape, Smile.
Or it's like, because in that whole space, that's like, I feel like the Dollar Shave Club.
Sure,
The phenomenon.
Yeah, ruined our lives for about 10 years, basically.
Yeah, where it's just like, okay, now every commercial at that budget range is a guy walking, doing snappy comments.
Yeah.
While like stuff happens.
Yeah. Josh, don't go to either of our websites.
Okay, yeah, sorry.
we do have a little bit of that. I mean, I like that stuff. You know, Lucia Agnello directed that you know, Dollar Shave Club commercial. Who she created Hacks and did Broad City and is like,
yeah, she did all right.
Kind of like comedic genius in her own right. So, yeah.
But anyway,
if you want to see it,
your point is there was a popular mode of like, this is how.
But it's nice, like what you're saying, like to go product first and to, I don't know.
Yeah. So if you want to see the type of commercial, if you're an agency producer and you want to see the type of commercial I'd be dying to make right now, and I think I would do a good job, and check out Manscaped the Boys on YouTube.
I also like shooting stuff when people are walking and talking. Like, don't
Josh,
if you want someone walking and talking or anything remotely funny, don't call Josh.
Yeah, no, just
call Matt or me.
That's fine.
Okay. Anyway, thanks so much, Josh. If you want to email us, talk to us, let us know how you destroy your neighbors, you can email us at justshootitpod@gmail.com. You can find us across all social media at justshootitpod. I'm on Instagram at okaplan.
And I'm at Mr. Matt Enlow. This episode was edited by Noah Bayshore. Thanks, Noah. And produced by Noah and Tyler Small. And you're listening to music provided by the Free Music Archive and the artist Jazar. Thanks everyone. Goodbye. Bye.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.